This month marks the anniversary of the Me Too movement. UH professor Tamar Kreps of the Schuyler School of Business sat down with us to talk about what happens now. She specializes in organizational behavior, ethics, and social psychology.
If we think about what made the Me Too movement really successful and resonant in the first place, it was about the power of kind of first-person testimony and narratives. So people, you know, you can tell even in the hashtag Me Too, it's about people talking about their own experiences. And we know from research, you know, some of my research and other people's research, that there is a certain power and legitimacy to people telling their own stories and advocating on behalf of an issue that they themselves are affected by. And so I think that's something that it will be important for the movement to carry forward. Of course, we saw with the confirmation that, you know, in the case of Dr. Christine Blasey Ford really powerfully telling her own story, it seems like that wasn't quite enough in that instance to shift the outcome there. But I think that the movement has really redefined what's, you know, seems normal in terms of sexual assault and sexual violence. And hopefully it will continue along that path with the power of kind of first-person narrative.
And we did see stories about how there were a number of calls that went into, you know, various support groups with victims, with folks who've been sexually harassed, just finally coming out and talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of what both the confirmation and the Me Too movement in general have brought to light is just how many people have been affected by this issue, and how really, even though we've all been kind of treating it as normal and usual for the past however long, it's really, you know, it really does have some effects. And the movement has really played a role in showing us that we don't have to treat it as normal, that the outcomes are really bad for people who are experiencing this. And we can think of this as a moral and ethical issue, even though we've all kind of been treating it as just the way that things are.
And we have seen over the last year or two a lot of very powerful people brought down.
Yeah, I think highlighting the role of power actually is really important here. Some of what the Me Too movement has focused on is workplace sexual harassment in particular, and the way that this all plays out within organizations. And I think there's a lot to kind of unpack about the role of power, power dynamics, power inequalities in the way that sexual harassment and sexual violence kind of play out. Because if you think about it, people at different, whenever there's kind of a power hierarchy, that really kind of constrains people's behavior and gives people a role to play in a way that might prevent them from being able to step back and say, well, you know, maybe something wrong is happening here. If you think about the people at the top of the hierarchy, those people are sort of liberated to take advantage of others. They feel less inhibited. We know this from some of the psychological research by things that otherwise, you know, they might think, hold on a second, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. So that's kind of the people at the top. At the same time, the people who feel like they're lower down in the hierarchy, when it comes time to sort of enforce some of the policies, they might think, well, it's not really my place to take a stand here. I'm vulnerable. I should just continue doing my job, put my head down, and follow what I'm being told to do. And so kind of at these different points along the chain, you can see how the power structure is inhibiting having these kinds of things come to light.
I know we had a situation at the legislature where the House is now rethinking their rules, their reporting rules, because we had a situation where the House Speaker stepped down, and he was the one person who, if you had a sexual harassment complaint, you brought it to him.
Right.
And, you know, in that case, he was the accused.
Yeah, it can be very complicated in organizations, especially when, as in that situation, there's just one person that you're kind of supposed to report to or who's enforcing the policies. People often can feel very uncomfortable reporting if there's any issue with that person, if they don't trust that one person in that situation. And so hopefully the Me Too movement and all of the different allegations that have come out since this movement started have encouraged organizations to think about their reporting procedures and really whether they're providing an environment that's conducive for survivors to come forward.
Right. And we were talking with the Hotel Workers Union, and I know they said that there was a situation with a particular hotel where the EEOC person, same thing, was doing the harassing, and it was just very awkward.
So it can often be sort of confusing to employees, especially when it comes to people, you know, people who are charged with enforcing the EEOC and other guidelines like that, or people who are in HR for the organization. You know, those are on the one hand, people who are supposed to be making sure that employees are being treated fairly, but at the same time, you know, they're there to protect the organization. And so sometimes it can seem to employees within the organization that there's a conflict of interest. So they're not really sure, is this somebody who's going to protect me, or is this person actually going to, you know, do whatever it takes to cover the organization? And so I think many organizations are rethinking, you know, maybe there needs to be an independent person who's not in HR, whose job isn't to just protect the interests of the organization, that maybe will create some more trust and a greater level of safety for employees who might need to come forward.
And what do you think is going to happen now?
Yeah, I think that probably this will really energize many voters, and women voters in particular, who may not have been so jazzed up in the previous election, but who now maybe see that there's more at stake in the political process. And hopefully that will happen not only at the level of, you know, national politics in the presidential election, but also with kind of local politics. People might feel more energized to advocate with this issue, which matters to so many people, kind of at the forefront of the process. I think also something that could continue to happen with the Me Too movement is that carrying along this spirit of people telling their own stories and kind of first-person testimony, we could look at some other kind of intersections of people who experience sexual harassment and sexual violence. So a lot of what's been happening that's been the most visible so far has been in sort of upper-income sorts of jobs. Like I know the media has had a lot of people who have come forward, and there was a kind of a list that was circulated with individuals in the media. So that's a prominent example. I know in my own field in academia, there's been a lot of talk about this. And I think that there could be more visibility to the experiences of people who have more sort of blue-collar jobs and in those kinds of workplaces, the way that these phenomena play out. So more attention to those kinds of phenomena, as well as women of different kinds of backgrounds, different racial backgrounds, different sexual orientation and gender identity, as opposed to mostly kind of wealthier white women telling their stories about this. I think a reason that this might prompt more people to vote is that it really highlights how much of a lack of consensus there actually is about this. I think sometimes people don't vote or don't participate because they just assume, well, everybody around me probably agrees with me anyway. And so, you know, there's no need for me to make my voice heard because it's just, you know, it's probably going to be whatever it is anyway. And so I think here it's become very apparent to many people who care deeply about this issue that really their voices do need to be heard. And they really can make a difference by speaking out, writing to their representatives or telling their stories, you know, be it on social media or in person, that really can make a difference to the attitudes that people hold about this issue, especially if they're somebody who hasn't, if the person they're speaking to is somebody who hasn't experienced it firsthand. Just knowing that my friend or my sister, somebody close to me has experienced this really can make a big difference.
Will it change how you teach in the classroom at all?
I expect my students to take a greater interest in issues related to workplace sexual harassment in particular. Since the movement has started, so in my course last year, I teach undergraduate organizational behavior. So we're talking about processes between people in the workplace and how to manage those. So I think I did incorporate more of a focus last year on kind of gender issues in the workplace, knowing that my students would be more interested in that topic. And I anticipate that the same thing will be true, maybe even more so this year, given the prominence of this issue in the media. I think my students are really interested in, first of all, in talking about it, just in relating their own experiences, and then also in understanding kind of what's happening as standards are shifting so much within workplaces. What do I need to know about how to handle this in the most up-to-date and the most sensitive way as somebody who's going into the workforce?
That was UH professor Tamar Kreps reflecting on the strides made by the Me Too movement and the changes that lie ahead.